listening to The Couples Guide Podcast.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Talia.
We're both licensed marriage and family therapists, and today,
like every day,
we're debunking myths and delivering truth about dating, relationships, and everything in between.
Trust us.
It's awesome.
I cannot believe that you would let your parents do that, Ryan. That is just unreal.
Hey, you know what? I'm still learning the rules of this game. I don't know what is good, what is bad, what constitutes it's a fair ball, or if it's an out there, off the line, hit the dust. What the hell do people call it? I don't know.
Sports games.
Sports, athletics.
It was really out of bounds of your parents to do that. So unbelievable.
How could you? Fine. You can talk to my parents if you want. Go for it. Yeah. That's not my responsibility, I don't think.
That is also a really good question. So today, for the listeners who are like, what the hell are you talking about? We are talking about boundaries with in-laws. It has come up for me recently with couples and individuals I've worked with and in my own life. How to set boundaries with in-laws and the impact of what that's like on your relationship. And if your partner also makes the request that you set the boundaries with the in-laws, because I've seen it go both ways. I've seen the partner come in and be like, hey, this needs to stop. And then I've seen the one partner be like, I need to set a boundary with your in-laws just so you know I'm doing it. I'll deal with the aftermath, but here's, you know, where I'm comfortable with or uncomfortable with. So we could go down both rabbit holes today.
Yeah, love it. And this is, I feel like, a really nice follow-up to our last episode about generally just boundary maintenance and keeping New Year resolution, boundary maintenance.
Yeah.
So this is a good specific scenario that can include that, but also just give couples a framework of some ideas about how to go about discussing, collaborating on what are your boundaries in the relationship when it comes to in-laws. It's actually such an important topic that this is one of my premarital counseling topics that I have for couples before they're getting married, that we always spend a full session just discussing in-laws and the role of in-laws in the couple's relationship as they're developing their new primary household away from the different families.
Would you say that you see, is it most common that you see couples who are
exciting?
Is it most common that you see couples who are similar in terms of wanting to stay close to each other's families? Or is it more common that you see one that's like, I need to get the hell away from my family, and the other's like, I love them, and it's like enmeshment?
You know, I don't think I see a trend. I think there's just all different stripes. What tends to be, that's part of, like, at least with premarital counseling, is a discussion into what have people already experienced with in-laws, or like what they've experienced in their relationship. And then also, how do people communicate? Like, everyone has different styles. For some people, it's want to get away, or they really want a very close family. But then also, people have very strong opinions of, and this can also come from cultural background too, about how much of voice and agency a partner feels they have with their family members, you know, whether it's like older or younger siblings, whether it is parents and what's happening there. So that's always a fascinating discussion. I like to start, first of all, with, before we even go into how to navigate setting and maintaining boundaries with family members and in-laws, how do different partners look at whose responsibility it is to do that? That's one of the things you were mentioning at the start.
I'm so glad you asked, because I have an answer prepared.
There you go. How, Talia, how?
So this might be the unpopular opinion, but this is how I do it in my household, that it's the partner's whose parents it is responsibility, that's grammar, to at least initiate the boundary. Like, okay, so let's say, and for those of you watching this, whatever, listening, just put out your hands. Partner A is in my right hand and partner B is in my left hand. Partner A is like, hey babe, I really need you to either request your parents do or not do something, because boundaries could also be more involvement, not only less involvement, or like types of involvement.
Yes.
Do you, and I always recommend people ask, do you notice this also? And 9 times out of 10, they're not going to notice it the same way you do, because they ideally, unless it's incest, didn't grow up in the same family as you, hopefully. So like, you're not going to have the same experience as your partner with your parents. So if I'm the one with the problem, it's my job to bring it to my partner's attention first and maybe problem solve at the couple level and ask. And if my partner doesn't intuit from the conversation, they should ask their parents or tell their parents, then I would make the obvious request. Oftentimes couples going to each other at that partner level is enough, quote unquote, enough to solve it, because partner B can then go to their mom and dad and go, hey, mom and dad, so-and-so and I were talking, or they frame it as their opinion because they view the couple as like a united front. Like, here's what we're going to do for our family from here on out. We would love it if you respected it. And then there's no need to get in the nitty gritty. She said, he said, they said, what have you. It's I'm delivering this to you, that this is our decision, not, well, so-and-so told me to tell you. Cause I've worked with couples like that. I'm like, that's not what we talked about at all in session, and also puts your partner in an awkward position, because now the next time they go over there, they're going to feel like the bad guy, or they're going to feel like the one who always is vocal about what's going wrong in the relationship and everybody else in the family system, especially when boundaries aren't comfortable. And this is often, like, this was from a Q&A too, not only our content, or material rather, that it's the partner who feels uncomfortable that wants to speak up, but then in speaking up they feel sometimes even more uncomfortable and going into the interaction pattern with the in-laws the next time. And if we're very comfortable speaking up to our own family, it's more sometimes, and this is for me, I'm way more comfortable speaking up to my in-laws. I do it nicely, but I'm not going to just sit there and be like, oh well, you guys always keep the peace, so hum-de-dum. Like, that's so not on brand for me. If I don't like something, you'll know about it. Like, mm-hmm. It's just, that's how I am as a person. And I actually want to be close to you. So that's why I'm bringing it up. If I didn't care, I would just silently resent you for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
So you have to just be clear. Yeah. Yeah. Your choice.
I basically agree with you. I'm just going to say it in a little bit different way. I think for standard operating procedure, without any like specific context of a specific relationship, I like to encourage partners to remember, you're the ambassador for your family.
That's a good word.
And so remembering that, especially earlier in relationships, and I don't mean like just starting dating, I mean like first couple years, then you're the ambassador between your family and your relationship. Mm-hmm. Which means if you're going to do that and you're the ambassador of your relationship for your family, you need to know the relationship policies. You need to know, hey, this is where we stand as a relationship.
Yeah.
And so you start with having a discussion with your partner about whatever the boundary is you need to be talking about if something's come up, especially in your example, if it's something your partner is struggling with and doesn't like or needs more or less of from your family, then you two get on the same page, you talk about it, and you come to an agreement together, say, okay, this is right for us in our relationship. We like this.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we want to communicate that. Now, maybe you have to acknowledge that it may not be something you would have chosen for your family on your own. But when you're in relationship, you need to also, as ambassador, advocate for your partner in the relationship if they have a different boundary.
Even if it makes you uncomfortable, exactly. And especially when it makes you uncomfortable, because if you keep the peace with your family of origin, whom you don't live with, ideally, mm-hmm. only to come home to the partner who you do live with, mm-hmm. which one would you rather be pissed off? Probably not your partner. So yeah, I've lived this before where it's like, but why do I have to? Yes, you do.
Well, it goes back
deal with my wrath or set the boundary.
Well, it goes into when you're building, you know, from our perspective, when we're talking about these,
it's a couple state of mind. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're establishing a whole new unit of household, and ideally your more primary unit of household. Now there's multi-gen houses, and there's also different cultural considerations about to what level different
absolutely
members have
100%
of hierarchy in a family. That doesn't change this basic of you're the ambassador for your relationship to the rest of your families. And so getting on the same page with your partner, understanding what needs to be communicated, and then it's your responsibility. And I just want to re-echo what you said. And it's not your responsibility to then go throw your partner under the bus, because that's you being an ambassador for your partner. No, I'm saying you're the ambassador for your relationship. So it's a we discussion when you go to your family and communicate what you as a couple need from your family members. And then that allows it to be very clear that you're not throwing your partner on the bus. You're not triangulating your partner,
right,
which is you're now the go-between for one specific human, which is a danger zone. You're doing it in a way that, yeah, it's actually, hey, we want to do this. We want to go there. And side note, I just realized as I'm saying this out loud, it does take some practice to get used to the we. And so if you don't have a lot of experience with that in speaking for relationship, I think one of the cool things to look out for early on when you're starting to get like really significantly into a relationship, start thinking about when you're making plans and it involves the person you're dating, your like your serious boyfriend, your serious girlfriend, your partner. Start getting to have like, you know, that idea of, well, let me check with so-and-so and I'll get back to you. And then go back to like the invitation when you make plans and say, hey, so we're free here, we're not free there.
It's just
a little tip and trick about how to kind of start developing that idea for yourself in a relationship, for training your friends and family in a sense that, hey, sometimes it's not just
it's a couple, yeah,
you're asking one, you know, just, you know, you to hang out. It's also, hey, well, if you're asking when are you free on a weekend to do a double date, then get into
it. It has to match for both of us. Yeah. And I saw Stan Tatkin wrote a post the other day. He's a very well-known couples therapist, a great account to follow. He was talking about in adult relationships, it's you're not asking for permission in the same way you would as a parent. Like asking a partner for permission or double checking if it works for them is not the same thing as going to a parent of like, can I please do this? And so many couples get that twisted because they're like, well, I shouldn't have to ask for, I'm like, no, but also how would you feel if the shoe were on the other foot and they just made all these unilateral decisions without considering your relationship, to your point? And they're like, oh, that makes more sense. I'm like, it's not that you also, which is different than from probably when you were growing up, when your parents said no, that was the final say for most people. If your partner says no, depending on what it is, how your relationship is, what have you, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the final say. You could also be like, I respect that, but I'm still going to do it. Or you could also frame it as like, look, you're probably not going to like this, but this is my choice. As long as it doesn't violate our couple agreements or what have you, if you may feel slightly disappointed, but it's not going to be our undoing, I can tolerate that. Like I'm going to move forward with this decision, even if you don't love it, as long as it doesn't violate like our union agreements or us, you know, being boyfriend and girlfriend, something like that. So I think from what you're saying also, it's so important for couples to practice that. And this could be done like at a restaurant, like we'll have the calamari. Like it could be so low stakes that it's like practice of the linguistics of it. Yeah. And it helps to not then split off. And the partner, especially enmeshed parents who struggle with boundaries, or parents who like no negative emotions, they like to just keep everything happy all the time and nothing's ever a problem. They're the most often ones to be like, oh, well, did so-and-so say that? And it's like, no, we decided it. Are you sure? Because if so-and-so said that, I'd be happy to talk to them. And it's like baiting the couple, the one partner into throwing the other member of the couple under the bus. Yeah. And that's where, yes. And I think we should do a different episode on this too, but I see it the most common couples struggling with this, or individuals who come in reporting they want help, is with families who have differing levels of individuation and autonomy. It's usually the person who has more individuation and autonomy from their family. The person who's like had the fight with their parents of like, you don't own me anymore. They've set the boundaries before. They've disappointed their parents. They're fine doing it. Partners with the, that's why I asked you in the beginning, partners with the person who's like, oh my God, no, my parents are angels. I'm like, oh, so you haven't reached the age where you've seen your parents as people. Understood. And so my parents are not an angel matches with the person who's my parents are an angel. And it's like, hey, it bothers me that your parents do this. Could they change? I could never. It's like, well, if you don't, I will. I just wanted you to have the opportunity. And that's usually uncomfortable for that person because they don't have the same level of autonomy or individuation from their family of origin. So it would feel much more like a betrayal or like a traumatization if they were to set that boundary. Whereas for the person who's already individuated, they're like, I don't need you. Like, I want to be around you. I want to be in a relationship with my family. But this boundary is really important to me, so much so that I'm willing to sacrifice a little comfort and we'll get through it. we'll grow and get through it. I'm not just going to stay silent though and resentful like we talked about earlier.
Yeah, that never works.
Yeah. No. Then you end up in family therapy.
Well, yeah, great. And
then which is a good thing. Which is a good thing. Yeah.
What the my brain went to a place of, with those differences, if you are a partner who's comfortable setting boundaries with your family and your spouse isn't and they don't have that experience, I just started thinking about, like, how can you be that person supporting your partner, still be their ambassador to their family? So first of all, still continuing like what I'm saying, number one is get on the same page, at least have that discussion and decide together collaboratively, where do we stand for, you know, how often, yeah. Or, you know, I think the example I like to use is, can the parents come over without calling to see the baby?
No.
For some families, like, cool, stop by whenever. Other families, it's no, I need at least a half hour heads up. For some families, it's like, you need to schedule that a week in advance. It's whatever is right for the parents of the baby to communicate to the grandparents. But anyway, if that example, and you're the partner who's more used to communicating that to your family, and your spouse isn't used to that, they don't know how to do that, then once you're on the same page, acknowledge to them that that can be really difficult. Validate that they've never really had to do that. Share appreciation that they're doing something different in the relationship and going outside of their own comfort zone. And prepare them for the fact that you've listened to this podcast and you know that they might get some blowback from their family like they've never had before. And that's normal.
Bank on
and
it.
That's okay. And yeah. Reassure them that you'll be there right afterwards after they might have a difficult discussion. Come back and then you'll be their solace and comfort and support if that's really mm-hmm. difficult and scary for them. And then also the fuck off and let them set it the way they need to practice setting the boundary with their family.
It's so hard.
Not you try to control it and make it your way you do it with your family, because families are different. And also, you know, consider that this is your spouse learning a new skill. So they're not going to hit it out of the park the first time. Let them figure it out on their way. Be there to support them, but also be the firm, steady. No, this still needs to happen. This is still what we agreed on. Let's go.
Did you call my couples therapist?
What, the control part?
Obviously.
Maybe.
Don't tell them how to do it, but my way is the most efficient.
I mean, there's ways to do that, right? There is the way to say, hey, if you'd like some ideas, here's how I would do it. This works for me.
Yes.
But not putting like the hardcore pressure and saying you need to do it this way. It needs to be done like this. It needs to be done at this time. Ask, you know, say, hey, how would you like to do that? Do you want to spitball ideas? Can I support you in coming up with how to do it? Here's how it's worked for me in the past where I do it, you know, this way. That's cool. But yeah, don't let your, I guess specifically to you, Talia, don't let your need for control and safety then add more conflict into the baseline of boundaries.
Like, that's my specialty. Like, come on, Ryan. I'm so good at it. I mean, it's how I've lived my life thus far. Why am I? I'm not going to change now. I'm just kidding. No, I'm working on it. But to your point, I think if there are things like the in-laws coming over or how much time spent on the phone, who goes to whom, if I need solace or care, if I'm not feeling well, would I turn to my partner or my parent, depending on what it is? Because my mom's a doctor. So like, sometimes it makes sense to call her for some things. But other times, if I want like comfort, I would turn to him. So, well, depends. But I think there's something to be said for if there is something specific about it that you do want conveyed, or it does need to be done at a specific time, then making that important and saying like, and because this event is happening this weekend, it would make sense for it to be done by Thursday. So we have some wiggle room. Would that work for you? Like, you're pitching it, but you're also still open for wiggle room rather than you setting it and being like, Godspeed. And because it's new for them, they're like, oh my God, it's the morning of and I forgot to say it. Whoops. You want to have some sort of touch point ahead of time to debrief. So you two are united front going into whatever the event is. Also, yeah. I would say there's that caveat. You should, put in quotes, should put a time limit on it because of the debrief nature of some of these boundaries.
Yeah, certainly. Two points. First is sometimes there are boundaries that have a temporal element, like, hey, there's an event coming up, or this is like, it's going to happen tomorrow. So like, we need to like have this conversation. So yes, that's part of the get on the same page about timeline wise. And then second thing, I really love what you're saying, is have a debrief so that you can, first of all, just continue to be on the same page, hear how it went when your partner is going to family members to be the ambassador. You got to hear how the ambassador meeting went, you know. Mm-hmm. And then especially in this scenario where, if we're talking about maybe you're the partner who's very comfortable with setting boundaries and you're with someone who's new to it with their family, then also the debrief is the guaranteed I can support you and make sure we can talk about it. And, you know, maybe if it doesn't go great the first time, you can figure out how that comfort and soothing can set your partner up for success for the second time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love the debrief idea. Just again, it just keeps you on as a team. You're collaborating. You're aware that's happening. If it's hard for your partner, then you gotta go, hey, I'm in your corner still. I got your back.
Mm-hmm.
And also, just know if there's any blowback or if there's any needed compromise or feedback or new perspective from the family members and the in-laws.
Mm-hmm. And if, because I have dealt with this. I don't know if I've dealt with it personally, definitely dealt with it professionally, not the in-laws texting me. That would be a whole other level. I'd be like, so we're going to all have a meeting about boundaries. Uh-huh. In fact, I'm changing my number. No. How did they get my number? Is coming at it from the understanding with your partner, like what does enmeshment is a huge one that I work on with families. Like couples have differing levels of individuation and enmeshment. And it's like, well, they're on their phone with the parent every single day. Probably a lot, unless there's some, in my opinion, health crisis going on, aging parent, like attributable reason where that frequency of check-in would be like necessary, you know. Other than that, it usually is a sign of enmeshment. I knew one couple, it was years ago, I forget, I think it was somebody told them at their wedding, like, well, don't turn into so-and-so. And I guess that person, the husband of that couple, so-and-so, was on the phone with his mom like every night. Mm. The husband was still alive. Like, it was not a need for, like, I'm replacing some weird family system thing. Like, it just was very inappropriate boundaries and enmeshment. And when the wife tried to bring it up to the husband, like, took the mom's side. Like, you have to be on the same page about those individuation and enmeshment. What I'm getting at is when you set that boundary, don't be surprised if the in-law tries to, like, short circuit and come for you instead of going for the partner directly. And if that's the case, then to your point, you'd be like, let me talk to so-and-so and we'll get back to you, rather than it being this side bifurcated conversation. Because if it's not something that really came from you, you're going to have your partner's back and you might get defensive. Or if it did come from you, then it's going to be like guns blazing potentially, or you might shut down and be like, no, I didn't mean it. Like, it could go either direction. So still keep it couple state of mind.
Yeah. I love that. It's a good idea. And actually a fairly common scenario where you might have an in-law who unintentionally doesn't understand this whole ambassador idea I'm talking about, and they want to short circuit, like you say, and go straight to you.
Yeah.
Which makes just kind of common sense. Like, hey, I'm having an issue with someone. I want to go talk to them. But if we're talking about inherently this is someone with poor boundaries, then they're sidestepping the relationship and the value mm-hmm. that their family member has as your partner to be mm-hmm. that ambassador. It's just a great opportunity to use that language that we talked about that you just gave an example of. It's a great opportunity to go, ooh, this might be a thing to discuss with my partner about another boundary to communicate to my in-law that if there is an issue, like, please talk about it with primary family member and then we'll get back to you and go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Love that period. Wrap it with a bow.
Yes.
Hang on to it. I do want to acknowledge, though, like, while we're talking about this, obviously, there are just times where you're going to be talking directly with your in-laws. It doesn't mean like, hey, you can never have these types of discussions. Sometimes it really is important that when it is and really between you and one of your in-laws that you need to have the one-on-ones.
Yes.
That goes to, I think, two factors that are important to think about. First of all is stage of relationship. If you have successfully in the early stages of relationship, like, built some of these norms and boundaries of ambassadorship, then that's mm-hmm. going to be pretty obvious when the time comes that you might need to have that really big one-on-one. Mm-hmm. If you haven't done that, it's been messy, then it can be a little bit harder to clean up. But I would say, generally speaking, it would you would want to look later stage of relationship for when it's time to start having those one-on-ones with
you mean later stage of you and your partner or yes, how long you've known the in-law
partner. Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Because like, and it also just depends like how close you are with these in-laws, you know. Sometimes there's tons of people who are really, really close with their mother-in-law, for example. And so there wouldn't, and maybe there's like a rift or rupture that's just about that friendship. And it really doesn't have anything to do with like a household boundary it's violation.
Not, I've been through that too with previous partners. It's actually, it would be inappropriate to involve the couple partner, or your romantic partner, because it's not a romantic thing. It's like something that the, like body weight comments, things like that. That's not about our relationship. That's directly from you to me, and we're going to address it as such.
So actually, okay, that's my a partner great
can
example.
Have my partner can have my back, but that's something that I am going to me. You know me. I'm going to speak up about that, and at that point, you can deal with it because it's your mom. But I'm absolutely going to address it just like I would if anybody else said it, and you can even see me getting heated now on it. Like there are certain things where I'm going to address it, and I don't actually need you to have my back because I'm. Not seeing it as let me preserve the relationship. I'm pushing the pedal on my objective needs to be met, that that's not okay to talk to me that way or what have you.
Yeah. So I actually have perhaps a conflict.
Alternate.
A different opinion.
Sure.
But I think it's a great example of how, because that it is such a very personal boundary violation.
Yes.
So your in-law is making very rude and inappropriate comments about body to you.
Yeah.
I'm coming from this place of suggesting that really early on in dating or early relationship, like, again, first couple years until there's a very strong relationship built with that in-law, I think it is still the partner's responsibility to be ambassador. That is then the partner advocating, and it needs to happen kind of first time it happens. Like, the first time
One I'm so glad you brought that up.
Really inappropriate remarks. It can be really uncomfortable for you to be in that position to have to confront your
parent.
Partner's parent. So whereas naturally you'd be like, hey, that's not cool. And maybe you do appropriately. You say like, I'm not comfortable with that. And you just kind of, you know, let that go. Not let it go, but you let that lie. You set your verbal boundary and be done. But then you debrief with your partner and say, hey, that's not cool. If that's how your mom like speaks to me,
yeah,
we need to talk about that because that's not all right with me. And I would still encourage that then your partner is the ambassador at the early onset. But this where I'm thinking about is, let's say this is a number of years down the road and somehow this behavior starts again or you start hearing a new thing. There could be a place where now you have developed enough of a relationship with this in-law that you can just straight up directly say, hey, I'm not cool with that.
Yes.
And set that boundary. And then be done with that, if we're clear.
What I think what you mentioned
would be bringing your partner in if then, say, that in-law continues to not respect it or it becomes more of a conflict or a point of disagreement between you and your in-law. Then you're going to need to access your relational support, your partner, the family member, and go into that. But that's a really good example of how it can look different from when you're early on dating. Yeah. Versus you've been together 10 years and you have an established relationship with the family because it's such a personal boundary.
It reminds me of a case I knew about from years ago where the one partner was very understandably like what would be the word we would use? Peeved? Like, no, not peeved. Betrayal trauma. Like it wasn't just like, oh, it's annoying or like there's that thing they do, you know, it was like a true betrayal trauma. And the case, like the paper was like identifying right where the rupture had happened and how much repair could have happened if the partner had spoken up to the partner's parent. Cause it was like partner A's parent said it to the other partner and partner B looked at the partner A, like, please help me. That was not okay. And partner A took the parent's side. And did not have the partner's side and they stayed together, but they were like wondering, well, why aren't we married yet? And why can't we commit? And why can't we this? And that person was like, it's because of your mom. I can't move forward with it because you didn't have my back. You had her back. And how am I supposed to trust you moving forward? Like, I feel dethroned. Like, it was a huge rupture that you also, when you're talking about it, like being mindful of what role that person plays in that person's life. And if there is enmeshment, you might not have the partner have your back right then. You're allowed to ask, like, as uncomfortable as it is. And even I've had to do that, like turn to your partner and be like, and not in a petty way, but could you be like, can I please talk to you in the kitchen for a moment? Pull them aside and be like, I need you to address this because either we're not close enough or I'm so mad, I'm going to snap. Please have my back. Yeah. Like either way, I'm either uncomfortable or I'm too comfortable.
Yeah.
Exactly. So be aware.
Well, and that goes to the important place of the role of us being ambassadors for our relationship. It's that's so that you have your partner's back. It's so that they feel like, so that your partner feels like your relationship is a priority, that you do have their back, and that you're establishing these new priorities in your life, because you are, you know, especially when you get to that level of like super strong commitment and you are in that partner territory, you're engaged, you're developing a family together. Like when you get to that hard level of commitment, it's like, hey, we are developing these new priorities. And so it's so important to be developing that felt sense, that emotional bonding connection, that you can trust your partner to have your back. Now, we all make mistakes.
Of course.
Absolutely. There can be a moment like, and I'll use me as an example of like, I wish I had a specific one, but I'm sure there's been times where my partner, I totally missed that she needed me to like have her back. And I was like citing some random thing with her mom or her sister or whatever. And I didn't catch it in the moment because, you know, sometimes I'm oblivious and that's just being a human being. But most importantly is if she were to take me aside, like you're saying, a good idea is like, hey, can I talk to you in the kitchen for a moment? Or say after the hangout later on, she goes, hey, that's not cool with me. I really need some support. Then I can go, oh, thank you for teaching me that. I totally missed it. Let's repair that rupture. And I can commit to you moving forward. Great. I know that now. And I will put effort and energy into paying attention to that in the future. And now we're going to get back to we're on a team. Now, in that example, I guess I kind of muddied the waters because she would have been the ambassador for the family in that example. But it's still the point of going, cool, I can get your back and be good at this. And we can be working together as our priority relationship is in managing how we interact with our in-laws.
Yeah, and you're giving a it's going to be uncomfortable. Like it's you pick your discomfort. Is it more uncomfortable for you to address it in the moment, or is it more uncomfortable for you to have to bring it back up again and be like, "Hey, remember the other day when this thing happened? It wasn't cool. So don't do it again." Obviously, that's a very brief and not thought out boundary, but like which one would you rather be uncomfortable with? And I've worked with couples and dealt with this personally. It's like, "Well, it already happened." Yeah. That's why you need to say something, because you don't want it to happen again. Because what happens when it happens again, and most of the times it is a multiple boundary violation by the time it gets brought up, or it's one that's so intense you never want it to happen again because it's so uncomfortable, that you look for that, and one partner wants to escape the discomfort of having to face the family, and the other partner is like desperately leaning in to be like, you need to address this, parentheses, maybe, or I will. Yeah. And that is part of separation and individuation, not only from your own family of origin. It's going to be uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable when the two of you have created a dyad and a couple state of mind, and that dyad has to individuate from both families of origin to create what will be, if you have children, your children's family of origin. So it requires discomfort. It also requires it's going to take a lot of joy, and it's going to be a lot of happiness, because you might expand your families in ways that you never knew. But boundaries can also be expansive. It's like, hey, we're not available for this time, this we'll never be available for that, or we're only available for it this time. And if, let's say, the in-laws were just barging in, they wouldn't take it as like, oh, you never want us to visit. It's like, oh, you are more comfortable and we get more of you if we schedule it. Win-win. Mm-hmm. You can't only see it as a negative. So I think, again, generationally, especially the boomer generation, or like from 50 to up, they really struggle with like the whole like toxic mother-in-law thing that I've seen on social media, where it goes either way, that the mother-in-law typically, colloquially, like always checks out and they're like not involved at all, or they become like super involved because they feel dethroned by the female partner heteronormally coming in, and it's like, well, you'll never be good enough for my son. And it's like, okay, lady. And then I've asked more with couples, they're like, oh, she's driven everybody I've ever dated away. And I'm like, and did you notice that the type of women you've dated have become more and more assertive? Because it's like beating the final boss in the video game. You're finally with a partner who can stand up to your mom, and now you're deathly afraid of it, but you know it needs to happen because it's just very dysfunctional that you can't marry your mom. And not to be morbid, but everybody dies. Sorry if that is a spoiler alert for anyone. Your parents, sad though it may be, ideally natural order of things, will pass on before you. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you will pass on, then your children, if you have them, will pass on. That's the ideal order. You want to be close to them, but not so close it's enmeshment. And you'd like the relationship to have enough boundaries that the closeness can stay intact, where it's not teetering on a bunch of people shoving down what they're upset about and not setting boundaries. Yes, it's going to be uncomfortable. Pick your discomfort. You either got to face it in the moment or bring up the conversation. And sometimes it's like every 6 months you see them. So do you really want to sit on that for 6 months and bring it up the next holiday season? Probs not. Probs not. Make that phone call the Monday after. Hey, we got to talk about something that happened. We're not okay with this. This is what we would like moving forward. Is that possible for you? I would like you to apologize to my partner. That was not cool what you said. This is me having their back. That's what I need from you, mom or dad. You're also allowed to request that too without throwing them under the bus because you're requesting it. You're not saying so-and-so wants you to apologize because that's using thirds inappropriately.
No, thank you. Yeah. You're the answer.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about like how we're talking about these examples, like a rupture has happened, period.
Yeah.
So sometimes it can be really clear to find the boundary because you know it's going to be the type of boundary violation that is going to be a pattern. But even if it's not a pattern and it's just the first time rupture, how you as a couple address ruptures, boundary violations, or any kind of discomfort in relationship, then is like the meta boundary you're paying attention to. Also, early in relationships, again, if you do it the first time, instead of, oh, it was just that one time, it won't happen again, or, you know, it's like the idea of everyone gets the first one free. I'm really against that idea because it's actually, if the first one's free, you're more likely to have that same behavior, if you don't address it, happen again. Whereas the first time, you go, oh, no, this is exactly when to speak up and mention, hey, that wasn't really cool for us. So let's just repair that right now. Let's go ahead and compassionately address it and set the norms of how you are being a master of relationships, set the norms with your family members about what's right for you and your partner. And then that's a lot easier because family members are in learning mode already at that stage. Like, oh, there's this new really significant other in our kid's life. We're excited to get to know them. And we're just going to start learning everyone's little differences. And that's fine. It's much more difficult and distressing when already a pattern's been established, not been addressed for years. And then suddenly you're in couples therapy and now you have to start really, really addressing these new patterns or these old patterns in a new way. That's going to be way more difficult.
It is. I will tell you it is, and it's worth it. I will also tell you it's worth it, but it's the longer it goes unaddressed by the unit of the, like, let's say you and your partner to the unit of the in-laws, whichever unit you're looking at, the longer it goes unaddressed, the more resentment can have time to build, the more anger, the more hurt. Also, the more missed opportunity for closeness. If you truly want closeness, there's a sacrifice that is made of closeness or time together. If one or both partners is sitting there feeling so resentful and uncomfortable, they're not going to be the ones reaching out. Or if the in-laws are reaching out, they're not going to be the ones facilitating meetings or what have you, because you and I, or we and we, have a bone to pick. Like, there's something that's been a rupture that's not being addressed. And I think some of the most groundbreaking work can be done when the couple is brave enough to break those generational patterns. And it's like, no, we want to address it. I don't care that it's uncomfortable. A lot of things in life that worth having are uncomfortable and they take work. And I want to be close to you as my romantic partner. And that sometimes means we can't be close to our in-laws. And sometimes we want to be close to our in-laws, but we are struggling with how to do that because we're fighting with our partner about something. Like, you have to look at it from both systems levels, but truly sometimes the in-law interaction is costing you happiness and joy at the primary family level. I'm not saying cut off your family. That's like everybody's trending now. Like, just cut them off. I'm not saying that. but take an honest look at how does your couple relationship do leading up to and coming out of seeing or interacting with your in-laws. Mm-hmm. Do you fight? Is there a hangover effect? Is it projective? Is it coming out sideways because you really aren't addressing things with your parents or your in-laws, and then it's coming out at your partner? Like, that's what I always tell people, like, be mindful of how you are going into and coming out of an event, and that will tell you majority of what you need to know about how much time to spend with that person without the boundaries being put in place, until they are put in place.
And one important discussion I like to have with my premarital couples is, like, change is happening.
Yeah.
And since they're the ones coming into therapy, to counseling, then they're inherently, like, attuned to that change. They're excited for that change. And so much of relational health is about how do you manage change. Mm-hmm. And so I like to empower my premarital couples into think about how they handle change, the stress of change, and how are they leaders in the changes in their world, and do their families have those same skills and values or not?
Yeah.
And if their families don't have those skills and values, then they can be compassionate leaders in that space. And compassionate leaders doesn't mean letting your relationship boundaries be trounced on. It means maintaining the boundaries strongly, but with compassion, and then acknowledging when your family members are sad, angry, frustrated, hurt by the change that's going on in the life that you're having with your new partner, then you can still be like, hey, change sucks, but this is our change. And you have to acknowledge, like, if I'm choosing to bring a partner in, which hopefully you as my family member love me and want me to have a fulfilling, healthy relationship, then that's for you to manage the changes that are going to happen. Yeah, you're right. I'm not going to get to spend one-on-one time with you as much anymore. That's a bummer. I really liked that. But you know what? I have a partner who I really care about and I really want to invest in building a strong relationship with. So I'm not going to be around as much. That's just going to be it. And a lot of times now when there's time to hang out, it's going to involve my partner. So now it's not one-on-one. Okay, that's change. And that can suck. And that's for them to deal with on their own. And for me to just maintain and support and lead how the change works. So just kind of got into an example there of just thinking about change in that way when you're thinking about these boundaries, whether it's for you, your partner, or the family members. Remember, change is hard, and that's okay. Let them deal with it on their own.
I also totally forgot to mention siblings in this whole thing, like siblings-in-law. Huge part of it. And to what you just said of, like, we're not going to be able to spend as much one-on-one time, that was something my brother and I had to go through when I met my partner years ago, and also when I have the baby. Like, even forget him. Like, it's not going to be one-on-one time ever again, really, because I have this little one right here for a super long time. And even if it is, like, choice, certain times, like, he'll invite me to some things, and I'm like, if I didn't have whatever responsibility to partner, to child, I would totally go. Like, I would love to go reconnect to not single me in that sense, but, like, solo, like, individual self autonomized me. But it's just not the season of life I'm at right now. So there's going to be a grieving process and change with in-law relationships with your siblings too. And I've worked with a lot of families who one partner is really close to their siblings and the other partner either doesn't have siblings or isn't close to them. That's also a big difference to overcome. Why are you, you know, I have had couples before, they're like jealous of the sibling. I'm like, they're not sleeping together. Like, ew, first of all, that's not at all what's going on. Like, and let me guess, quality time is your love language, because really what it comes down to is quality time spent with their sibling feels threatening because it means less time for you with your relationship partner. And that's something that could be at the parent level or at the sibling level. Obviously, it's still worth addressing, but I'm glad you brought that up. It just triggered that part of my brain to speak on this. This isn't just adult parent-in-laws. This is also sibling-in-laws or nieces or nephews. It's like every in-law system of the family, whether you're married or not, if you're together long enough, they are the in-laws. They would be either they are or they would be the in-laws. It's something to keep in mind how you want the relationships to look and prep them for the change if you can.
Well, that's what, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's perfect. That's exactly what I want to say about expectations. You can do a lot of preventative work to make sure that you're communicating with your family members about expectations so mm-hmm. that you and your partner have had a discussion. And this is one of the things, again, I do with premarital counseling of about what roles do you want your family members to play in your relationship? And I know it sounds like a weird phrase, but I don't mean like, hey, like how active and enmeshed they're going to be, but no, like how does that look? How do you navigate these relationships now that you're really investing in a strong partnership? And again, once you have a clear understanding with your partner, then you can go be the ambassador and set expectations ahead of time before there's even the opportunity for a boundary violation. And you can support your family members for change. Because at the end of the day, like most people are fairly resilient. They, you know, we do know how to change in our lives, but you got to remember, you got to give people time to change. So when you set expectations, you let them know what's going to happen. Like when Atlas wants to wake up and say hello, you make light adjustments, you give some good expectations, and then people figure it out from there. And remember, like the first time you set an expectation, people can just process it. Your family members can go, oh, okay, let them grieve, let them adjust to the change, let them figure it out. So as we start wrapping,
might I recommend pacifiers? They work wonders.
Yes.
They really do. For adults, give a binky. If you don't like what your in-laws are saying, pop a binky in their mouth.
There's a reason why ring pops exist for all ages.
Screw the whole episode. I can just go right to the solution.
All right. Let's scrap what we just recorded. 30-second podcast. Put a cork in. Everyone needs to buy a case of ring pops for their in-laws.
And give them to people when you're done with them not listening to you.
Anything happens with your in-laws, you don't like it, just throw them a ring pop. Here you go. No. Here's your ring pop. Please suck on this.
Suck on that. Yeah.
Suck it. Yummy.
Oh, man.
How about you? I'll be happy if someone gives me a ring pop. Fine.
I would, too. Yeah, blue raspberry is my favorite.
There you go. Yeah, and then you get the bonus of the blue mouth afterwards. I mean, wow. Anyway, that was my last point. Expectations. Talk about those ahead of time. Be the ambassador. And then hopefully that helps partners be more attuned and aligned so that you can go and share with your family and your partner can share with your in-laws some of the important things. I think we'll wrap there, especially since Atlas is saying hello again.
Hello. Yeah, I'm going to leave it on mute.
Okay, cool. Then I'll wrap us up. Thank you, everyone, for listening to episode 115 of the Couples Guide podcast. If you have any questions for us or you want something specifically answered on the podcast, shoot us an email, ryanandtalia@thecouplesguidepodcast.com. And I'll say thank you for Talia. And of course, thank you for me. Take good care.